Dark Fire by C.J. Sansom. Narrated by Stephen Crossley.
Chapter 1. I had left my house in Chancery Lane early to go to the Guild Hall to discuss a case in which I was acting for the City Council. Although the far more serious matter I would have to deal with on my return weighed on my mind, as I rode down a quiet Fleet Street, I was able to take a little pleasure in the soft airs of early morning. The weather was very hot for late May, the sun already a fiery ball in the clear blue sky, and I wore only a light doublet under my black lawyer's robe. As my old horse Chancery ambled along, the sight of the trees in full leaf made me think again of my ambition to retire from practice, to escape the noisome crowds of London. In 2 years' time I would be 40, in which year the old man's age begins. If business was good enough, I might do it then. I passed over Fleet Bridge with its statues of the ancient kings Gog and Magog. The city wall loomed ahead and I braced myself for the stink and din of London. At the Guild Hall I met with Mayor Hollies and the Common Council Sergeant. The council had brought an action in the assize of nuisance against one of the rapacious land speculators buying up the dissolved monasteries, the last of which had gone down in this spring of 1540. This particular speculator, to my shame, was a fellow barrister of Lincoln's Inn, a false and greedy rogue named Belknap. He had got hold of a small London friary, and rather than bringing down the church, had converted it into a hotchpotch of unsavoury tenements. He had excavated a common cesspit for his tenants, but it was a botched job, and the tenants of the neighbouring houses, which the council owned, were suffering grievously from the penetration of filth into their cellars. The assize had ordered Belknap to make proper provision, but the wretch had served a writ of error in King's Bench, alleging the friary's original charter excluded it from the city's jurisdiction, and that he was not obliged to do anything. The matter was listed for hearing before the judges in a week's time. I advised the mayor that Belknap's chances were slim, pointing out that he was one of those maddening rogues whom lawyers encounter, who take perverse pleasure in spending time and money on uncertain cases, rather than admitting defeat and making proper remedy like civilized men. I planned to return home the way I had come, via Cheapside, but when I reached the junction with Ladd Lane, I found Wood Street blocked by an overturned cart full of lead and roof tiles from the demolition of St. Bartholomew's Priory. A heap of mossy tiles had spilled out, filling the roadway. The cart was big, pulled by two great shire horses, and though the driver had freed one, the other lay helpless on its side between the shafts. Its huge hooves kicked out wildly, smashing tiles and raising clouds of dust. It neighed in terror, eyes rolling at the gathering crowd. I heard someone say more carts were backed up almost to Cripplegate. It was not the first such scene in the city of late. Everywhere there was a crashing of stone as the old buildings fell. So much land had become vacant that even in overcrowded London the courtiers and other greedy men of spoil into whose hands it had fallen scarce knew how to handle it all. I turned Chancery round and made my way through the maze of narrow lanes that led to Cheapside, in places scarce wide enough for a horse and rider to pass under the overhanging eaves of the houses. Although it was still early, the workshops were open, and people crowded the lanes, slowing my passage, journeymen and street traders and water carriers labouring under their huge conical baskets. It had hardly rained in a month. The butts were dry, and they were doing good business. I thought again of the meeting to come. I had been dreading it, and now I would be late. I wrinkled my nose at the mighty stink the hot weather drew from the sewer channel, then cursed roundly as a rooting pig, its snout smeared with some nameless rubbish, ran squealing across Chancery's path and made him jerk aside. A couple of apprentices in their blue doublets, returning puffy-faced from some late revel, glanced round at my oath, and one of them, a stocky, rough-featured young fellow, gave me a contemptuous grin. I set